Welcome back for another episode of the It's Murder Y'all podcast. I'm your host, Amber, and with me today is a man who's got a honky-tonk badonkadonk, my husband, Rob. Say hey, Rob.
There is a shitter on that critter.
Gross. So, a fun fact about me is that I love genealogy. And I love it to a point, I promise this is going to go somewhere. I love it to a point that it becomes about a two-week-long hyperfixation, at least yearly. So the other day, I was just casually looking through stuff about my grandparents, my mama and my papa, and I found their marriage license. Now, despite both of them growing up in Alabama, they actually got married in Georgia, which I always thought was weird. So I started investigating the area where they got married, and in doing so, I fell down a rabbit hole, and I uncovered a case that I just couldn't get out of my head. So I'm going to share it with y'all. So today's case takes place in Buckhannon, Georgia. Now, off the rip, I need to clarify with y'all that despite being spelled like it would be pronounced Buchanan, it is in fact Buckhannon. And Rob, if you hear me slip and say Buchanan, please call me out so I don't sound dumb. It is Buckhannon. And I should have written it phonetically.
I can't do nothing about you sounding like that.
I hate you. I should have written it phonetically, but I did not do that. So Buckhannon is a small town in northwest Georgia that is right across the line from Alabama. It's about 40 miles due west of my hometown of Alexandria, Alabama, or about 60 miles if you're driving a car, because you need to take the interstate, which is quite a piece away from Alexandria. I actually looked on a map, and it looks like if you like put your pen on Alexandria and drew like a straight, like parallel line across, it would go to Buckhannon. So as we discussed in the Blockbuster episode, people from Alabama often drive over to Georgia for lottery tickets and just stop in the first town they see when they cross the border. Buckhannon is one of those towns, and it actually makes me wonder if my grandparents were like, you know what? We should get married. Let's just drive over to Georgia and stop at the first courthouse we see. So as of the 2020 census, Buckhannon had a population of a little over 1,100 people. In 1950, around the time that today's case took place, though, the population was about 650, so we are dealing with another small town. So before we go forward, there are a couple things that you need to know. First, in case the 1950 population didn't give it away, this is an old case, which we've not done a whole lot of old cases. Secondly, there are a lot of details that are a little fuzzy-ish, because sometime around 1950-ish, which is around the time the case happened, a huge fire destroyed city records in Buckhannon. I've pieced everything together the best I can with what I could find. So there we go. So Charles Raymond Brody was born on February 25th, 1927, making him a Pisces. His parents were William and Rose, and he had a younger sister named Ruby. We don't know much about his life other than the fact that he married Barbara Russell, who went by Bobby, around 1950. Bobby was a little bit younger than Ray, and his family, especially his sister Ruby, was not a fan of hers. But Bobby was a looker, and Ray was young and in love, so he didn't care what his family thought. So a few months after Ray and Bobby got married, he had to go out of town for a couple weeks to go do business down in Candler County, which is about an hour outside of Savannah. Bobby was not jazzed about Ray going out of town, so they had this big blow-up fight the night before he left, and they didn't really part on good terms. Ray ended up getting delayed on his way back to Buckhannon, so he was going to end up getting back quite a bit later in the evening than he had originally told Bobby. So in his 23, 24-year-old logic, Ray decided that since he was already late, he'd just stop by the bar real quick for a drink and then try to mentally prepare for the fit that Bobby was going to be pitching when he got home. So Ray goes to the bar, and he sees his best friend, Andy Walensky. Ray and Andy had been best friends since they were little, and Ray knew Andy well enough to know immediately that on this night, Andy was T-rashed, like Rob St. Patrick's Day 2007 trashed, which will be a funny story for Patreon someday. So
one of my finer moments.
Yeah, it's a miracle that we are still together after that experience. So Ray grabs a drink, chats with the bartender.
To be fair, that is like, there are very few times in my drinking career that I've ever been that drunk. And I don't think I've been that drunk since.
Not that I've seen.
Well, I'm just like, I've really not been that drunk since. Like, that's one of my top five easy, maybe top three.
Yeah, it was a bummer, as you would say.
Yeah, there are parts of it I don't remember. A lot of it I don't remember.
Nothing about that shocks me.
Those Irish car bombs will sneak up on that ass.
They will. They absolutely will. I've never had one of those, I don't think. So Ray grabs a drink, chats with the bartender for a second, then he goes and sits with Andy, if for no other reason than to babysit him. So Andy had a history of making an ass out of himself when he drank, to the point that Ray was pretty much the only friend he had left because everybody else was tired of dealing with his drunk ass. So Ray sits down with Andy and he's like, "Hey, what's going on? What's new?" And Andy is immediately like, "Got some bad news for you, brother." And Ray's like, "Oh God, here we go." And Andy goes on to tell Ray that while he was in Candler County doing his business, Bobby was doing the business with Seth Amos, who was like a 1950s "Where's My Hug At" guy who Ray had already had beef with before. Ray is obviously pissed, but he also knows how Andy can be when he's drunk. So he tries to tell himself that, you know, Andy's just bullshitting, he's just being stupid. Well, then Andy tells him that, oh, by the way, he had also hooked up with Bobby. Apparently, she'd come in the bar the night that Ray left for his work trip, and she was still upset about their fight. So Andy tried to be a good friend and comfort her, and one thing led to another. So at this point, obviously, Ray is furious. One thing about Ray Brody is that he had a little bit of a temper anyways, but he's now black outrage mad. Like, he'd always heard rumors about Bobby, but now having to confront the fact that A, not only are the rumors true, but B, his best friend, his lifelong ride or die, was party to it. So he felt super betrayed, probably even more so by Andy than by Bobby, because Ray had always been there for Andy. He had always defended him when people talked about how he was just a good for nothing drunk. Like, he'd even gotten into a few fights in defense of Andy, and like, this is how he was going to repay him. So Ray does a very dude thing, picks up his drink glass, chunks it across the bar. And at this point, even in his drunkenness, Andy knew that he had fucked up. And so he decided to dip out before Ray decided to rearrange his face. So Ray, again, in his, he's going to use a lot of 23 to 24-year-old logic in the story. He decides to stay at the bar and down a few more drinks because that makes things better. And I'm honestly shocked that the bartender even let him stay after he caused a scene. Like, I can't imagine someone just hurling a glass across a bar, it's shattering everywhere, and people just acting like nothing had happened.
It's small town Georgia, bud.
That is true. And it's like
I'll lash
1950.
just Ray. He's got his red up.
And you know how he is. So after Ray is good and liquored up, he decides to go home and confront his hussy of a wife. But when he gets there is no sign of her. Not only that, but it looks like she hadn't been there for a couple of days. So he's thinking that she's probably gone back to her mama's house or like ran away with some dude or something. And this makes Ray even more upset. So he's pacing and he's pacing and he spots something out of the corner of his eye. And it is a Springfield model 1861 rifle that his daddy William had left him when he died a few years earlier. So Ray grabs his gun, stomps out his front door and just starts walking. Just walking casually with his rifle, as you do. By this time, it's like 2 a.m. And so we have this young 20-something-year-old guy who is blackout drunk. He has just found out that not only did his wife cheat on him, one of the many people that she cheated on him with was his BFF, and now she's MIA. Oh, and he has a gun, which also always makes things better. So I don't know if he purposely walked to Andy's house or if it was just habit, but that's where he ended up. And he figured while he was there, he might as well rip Andy a new one and tell him what a useless, good for nothing piece of shit he was. So Ray walks up on Andy's porch and he sees that the screen door is closed, but the front door is open, which immediately seems weird. Even though Ray is blackout drunk, it seems weird to him. So he calls Andy's name, but he doesn't hear anything. So he goes up to try to look through the screen door and he sees Andy on the floor and he is covered in blood. Now Ray starts freaking out because even though he was hot pissed, this was his best friend and he didn't want anything bad to actually happen to him. So he runs inside and
This
it
is
was,
after the throwing glass at the bar scenario.
yeah, so he like had a bunch more drinks at the bar, went home, thought about it, paced, got mad, got his
Said,
gun.
fuck this.
Yep.
Oh,
So
sorry.
it's okay. We cuss on this podcast. So he can see that Andy's dead. Now, this is the early 1950s. So cell phones obviously were not a thing, but Andy was also really poor and lived out in the boonies. So he didn't have a landline either. So Ray wasn't able to call for help. So he runs outside and he starts making his way back to town when he sees the sheriff's car approaching. So we have to go into a quick side tangent. So just a couple months before all this went down, longtime sheriff Harris Williamson had been fired because he had shot a former sheriff's deputy, Homer Marks. According to
Homer, he got fired for it. That's it.
Well, he also had to like go to jail for it. But according to Homer, who actually survived the shooting, thankfully, so he went to prison, but not for murder. Sheriff Williamson came to Homer's house at midnight, asking him to go with him to arrest some heathens who'd been causing him some trouble. So Homer got in the car with the sheriff. They drove out to Dallas Highway, and the sheriff stopped at the intersection leading to the Harrelson County Hospital. So the two men get out of the car, and for whatever reason, the sheriff pulled his gun out and shot Homer in the abdomen. Newspaper did not say why. It's funny, like the newspaper, it just said it so casually, as if it's not a big deal that the sheriff shot one of the deputies. But this is small town Georgia in like 1950. So by the time that Andy was murdered, the sheriff had been fired and the sheriff's deputy was recovering from a gunshot wound. So it was a little bit of like the wild, wild west in Buckhannon, to the point that we don't even
makes a lot of sense now that they didn't kick him out of that bar for throwing that glass.
That is true. So we don't even know who was acting as sheriff at this time. That is not, it's not information I could find. So Ray's walking down the road, trying to get to town to call for help, and he sees the sheriff's car. So by this point, it's like 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the morning. So it is pitch black and Ray needs to get the sheriff's attention. So again, that 23 to 24 year old logic comes in and he's like, I'll just fire a shot in the air.
An idiot.
I know. Which I think that's illegal. It probably wasn't 1950, but I think it is now.
Yeah. There's rules and laws associated with discharging a firearm. Most of them are within the city limits. If you're within city limits, it's probably a bummer for you. But outside of city limits, the rules are much more relaxed.
And Buckhannon is just a town. It's not a city, so it don't have city limits.
Well, then there you go.
So he fires the shot, and that definitely gets the sheriff's attention. So he pulls over, and he's like, what the hell are you doing? So Ray explains that he had just been to his friend Andy's house, and Andy was dead. So Ray gets in the car with the sheriff, and they hauled ass back to Andy's house. And Ray led the sheriff into the house, and the first thing the sheriff noticed was the footprints in blood. They were everywhere. And he asked Ray to take off his shoes so he could compare them to the bloody footprints. And wouldn't you know it, they were a match. So Ray tried to explain, like, yeah, I walked in here, I walked over to check on him, and then I left. But the sheriff wasn't having it. He's like, it is 3 o'clock in the morning, you have a gun, you bring me to this house where someone is dead from a gunshot wound, and the only footprints that I see belong to you. Boom, arrested. So, sheriff throws Ray in the back of his patrol car and books it down to the jail. Ray's basically in shock. Like, his best friend has been murdered, and now he's in the back of a cop car. He wants to clear his name, so he starts explaining the story to the sheriff, like, hey, me and Andy were best friends, but I found out he hooked up with my wife, so I was going over to his house to duke it out, but I didn't kill him. So, he's basically just, like, nervous and drunk, word vomiting everything that he can think of, not realizing how bad it was making him look. So, Rob, as you know, from playing your man Barbies, aka GTA or whatever police game it is that you play, when you arrest someone, you have to give them their Miranda warning. You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can will be used against you in a court of law. You have the right to an attorney. If you cannot afford an attorney, one will be appointed for you. Do you understand the rights I've just read to you? With these rights in mind, do you wish to speak to me? So what you may not know, though, is that the Miranda warning didn't become a thing until the 1966 Miranda v. Arizona case, where the Supreme Court decided that as an extension of the Fifth Amendment, law enforcement officials must advise suspects of their right to remain silent and to obtain an attorney during interrogations while in police custody. Otherwise, any statements made by the suspect would not be admissible in court. Well, that ruling came out 15 years after Ray's word vomiting to the sheriff, so he was hosed. To make matters worse, he was hosed in a small southern good old boys club town where normal rules didn't apply. And to make matters even worser, as my meemaw would say, just like Buckhannon was in between sheriffs, they were also in between judges. So Judge M. Neil Andrews had recently resigned as district court judge.
That's a fucking judge name, ain't it?
I know. Anytime they use the initials, like, that's a judge name.
That's old money shit.
So he had only been judge, I think, for like 3 years, and he resigned out of nowhere, and I couldn't find a reason why. So
I got tired of that shit.
I reckon so. So he resigned, and
you to know, sorry to go on a sidebar and interrupt, but when I retire, there's not going to be a watch giving ceremony. You know, you I am going to go scorched earth, depending on what company I work for. But like, it's not gonna be, it's gonna be like, all right, I'm out. I'm done. This is my last day. I'm sorry. I'm done. I can't do this anymore. Like, cause that's how it's gonna be for me. There's like, it's gonna be, I'm just gonna work till I, that's in my mind. It's like, I'm just gonna work until I'm just done. And like, when I'm done with a thing, it goes from not done, done. We're done. Now we're done. It's just like a, it's, you know what I mean? It's an on and off switch for me. And I feel like that's the way it's gonna be when I retire. It's gonna be like, all right, I don't think I'm gonna come in next week, guys. So if you guys want to go catch a beer after work or something, we can do that. But I don't think I'm gonna come in next week or any of the weeks after that. So I'm pretty done here.
See, I feel like my switch has already been flipped, and I would like to be done now, please.
Oh, I would for sure like to be done now, but you know,
I feel like we've talked
this
about,
economy.
I know, I feel like we've talked about this, but you probably don't remember. But at the place that I work, they are big on like celebrating your like work milestones. So I got this,
God, just leave me alone with all that.
I got this plaque for working there 5 years. Well, after a certain point, they give you stuff, but like it's they have this random assortment of shit, like, and you pick from, like, somebody got a lawnmower, somebody I think got like a necklace or earrings. It's just like this random
If I got a
shit.
lawnmower, if they give me a, if my company gave me a lawnmower, they would ensure my tenure for at least another 5 years. I'd give them 5 years on principle. Just, you gave me a lawnmower, dude. I was jazzed when they sent me an engraved, my personalized engraved flashlight and a USB like battery backup charger thing.
Like, and it's, I mean, and you get to choose. Like, it's just, here's this random
I
assortment of
wish they
like.
would just send me a fucking a nice polo or a sweater. You know what I mean? Send me, if you guys just sent me a nice jacket, a nice work jacket every year.
I mean, my work does that. Do you know what I
That's,
found out though? So, any of my people at work for me that are listening, ignore this next part. I was thinking about getting some type of like sweatshirt or t-shirt or something for my team. And so I talked to our director of finance, and he said that the place that I work, they have a limit. Like, you can only spend $100 per person per year on like apparel. And which I'm like, just in the past year, I know I've gotten two sweatshirts. You know, I've got that awesome LL Bean pullover that I love. I've got like two Columbia pullovers. I got two rain jackets. I'm like, I don't know where they're getting this stuff if it's under $100, but like I'm looking at a polo right now that I'm never going to wear because I don't wear polos.
what probably happens, in my assumption, is that whoever they have, well, I guess they don't have deals with LL Bean, but a lot of these companies probably cut them a massive discount to just buy in bulk from them. And then,
I know they do
so
with
that
t-shirts.
they probably get all this gear for next, you know, for pennies on the dollar. If they're willing to dish it out like that, yeah, they're still making money on that shit. Everybody, that's a win-win for them.
For sure. But back to our story.
Sorry,
No, you're fine.
retirement and money stuff.
I appreciate your side tangent. So, Judge M. Neil Andrews had resigned, and it was a few months before the next judge, Judge William Boyd Sloan, which I feel like is also a judge name, it'd be appointed. So again, it was Wild Wild West. So we had this temporary judge, and just like with the interim sheriff, we don't know much about this judge other than the fact that, like Andy Walensky, he was also intimately familiar with Ray's wife, Bobby, if you catch my drift.
Man,
So it's a small town.
fucking Bobby, chill, homie.
She was a little bit of a slut.
I mean, a little bit.
No disrespect to Bobby, but well, I
No, I mean,
mean,
no, yeah, but
kind of fuck
I
her,
just
but.
like, you can be a sleut, you just can't be a dumb sleut. And it sounds like she was kind of being a dumb sleut.
Yeah, a little bit.
You can't sl be sleuting irresponsibly. You can't sleut where you sleep.
We are not slut shaming y'all, I promise.
No.
So the sheriff calls up the judge, tells him the whole story, and the judge is like, meet me at my office. So the sheriff drags Ray over to the courthouse, explains all the quote unquote evidence against Ray to the judge, and the judge, in that moment, on that day, finds Ray guilty of first degree murder and sentences him to death. Now, when I first read that, I was like, no, absolutely not. Like, that's not how law works. So I did a little digging. And there's something called a bench trial, which is where a defendant can elect to have a judge decide a verdict instead of a jury. It doesn't happen a lot, but it does happen sometimes. So in this situation, why in the world would Ray elect to have a bench trial? Well, we don't really know for sure, but I would imagine that the sheriff and or the judge lied and told him that it would be the best option for him. What about his defense attorney, you might ask? Well, up until 1963, courts had no legal obligation to provide counsel if defendants couldn't afford it. In 1963, in the case of Gideon v. Wainwright, the Supreme Court ruled that the Sixth and Fourteenth Amendments guarantee a right of legal counsel to anyone accused of a crime, and that states would now be required to provide attorneys to defendants who could not afford one. So that's basically how the whole public defender thing came about. So if you were accused of a crime before 1963 and you couldn't afford an attorney, you were shit out of luck because you did not have to have one provided for you. So basically, I'm glad that I didn't live back then because shit was crazy. So it's over a
It's pretty
decade.
wild.
It was over a decade earlier that Ray was quote unquote on trial. So there was no obligation to provide him with a defense attorney who would have probably advised him against the bench trial. I think the sheriff and the judge knew how, surely they had to have known how sketchy this whole thing looked. So they tried to get everything taken care of before daylight. There was no phone call. There was no last meal. There was nothing. They just went full backwoods justice system, walked Ray to a big tree out back and hung him. So it wasn't until later the next day the town found out about Andy's
Wait,
murder.
they executed him that night?
That night, I'm telling you,
What?
small town Georgia in the 1950s was not a place you wanted to be.
Holy shit.
Yep. So it wasn't till later the next day the town found out about Andy's murder and Ray's hanging. I think people knew.
Fuck around.
I know. I think people knew that the whole thing smelled fishy,
Well,
but
if Bobby's running around town, loose lips sink ships, and motherfuckers was a talking.
oh, for sure.
Especially in the 50s, bruh. So, like,
But that gets to my next line, which was at that time in Buckhannon, you kept quiet, otherwise you might end up like Ray. So people didn't say anything.
what they knew.
They knew, but they weren't going to say anything. Fast forward 40 years, okay? Ray's younger sister, Ruby, who is now like this old mama, reaches out to a reporter for the local newspaper. She had heard that he was aiming to write a piece about the case for the 40th anniversary, and she told him that she had some information she wanted to share. So the reporter goes to Ruby's house, sits down with her, turns on his tape recorder, and Ruby lays it all out. Ray had not been the one to kill Andy. She had. Ruby and Andy had actually been engaged at the time, and she had found out that Andy had been messing around with Bobby, whom she fucking hated anyways. Like, remember I said that in the beginning?
Yeah.
His family
Yeah.
couldn't stand her. So, also, as I mentioned earlier, Ray had a temper, but Ruby's temper made Ray look stoic. Like, apparently, anger issues ran in the Brody family. Plus, Ruby was a redhead, and, you know, they're known to be spitfires. So, she's a little spicy. So, Ruby had gone over to Andy's house to confront him about Bobby. And when she got there, Andy had just gotten home from the bar, and he told Ruby that he'd confessed his encounter with Bobby to Ray. And this sent Ruby over the edge. Although she was the younger sister, she'd always been very, very protective of her brother. And in that moment, she basically forgot how hurt she was. Now all she could think about was how much pain her brother was probably in. And she just saw red. So she pulled out the 38 revolver she kept in her purse because she was a bad bitch. And she shot Andy where he stood. So as she's telling the reporter this, his mouth is obviously like wide open. Like he was thinking she was just going to give him some background details about Ray. Not that she was going to confess to a whole ass murder. So Ruby went on to say that she had planned on coming back the next day to clean up the scene. Because remember, he lived like out in the boonies and he didn't have any friends because he was a little bit of a shit ass. But by the time she did, Ray had already, he'd already been hung. And she said that she was devastated and that if she had known that Ray had been arrested, she would have immediately come forward to clear his name. But by the time she found out, he was already dead and she didn't want to upset her mama even more by confessing because then her mama would have lost both of her children. So she just kept it to herself. And she said that there wasn't a day that went by that she didn't think about Ray and how racked with the guilt she was for him taking the fall for her. So the reporter asked if she felt guilty for killing Andy. And she told him that for a long time she didn't because she blamed him for everything that happened. Like if he hadn't canoodled with Bobby, then him and Ray would both be alive. But over time, she did start to feel some guilt about what she had done. She told the reporter that there was one thing that she'd never feel guilty for, though, and that was getting rid of that old white trash whore, Bobby. Because because as it turns out, his cheating wife had never left town. That's one body that will never be found, because you see little sister don't miss when she aims her gun. And that was the night the lights went out in Georgia. Happy April Fools! So this episode, Rob, which you don't know this, this episode is actually going to come out on April Fool's Day, which I'm going to explain. But the case that you just heard is not real. It is a story based on the song The Night the Lights Went Out in Georgia.
Oh, that's cute.
So, listeners, if you're here strictly for the true crime, or untrue crime in this case, you can go ahead and stop here. Otherwise, allow me to give you a behind-the-scenes look at how this episode came to be. So, Rob, I know that you give me shit for shouting out other podcasts, but I have to give credit where credit is due. I got the idea for this from Crime
Junkie. No free ads. That's the only reason I say that.
I know. I got the idea for this from Crime Junkie. On April Fool's Day 2021, they released a fake episode that told a story from Taylor Swift's song Nobody, No Crime, and I loved it. I've actually had this planned for months, and only two people know, our kid and my niece, which the fact that our kid could keep this a secret is an April Fool's Day miracle. So I knew I wanted to do a country song, and I was originally torn between The Night the Lights Went Out in Georgia and Goodbye Earl. But I figured Goodbye Earl, that'd be too recognizable. Plus, I love some early 90s country, and it's Reba. Like, come on. So, in terms of the content of this episode, I tried to follow the structure of the original lyrics as best I could without being too obvious. Then I added some details from the music video, some true historical Buck Hannon information, some connections to my own family history, and then I just made some shit up. So, our main character, Charles Raymond Brody, the song never mentions his name, but in the music video, Reba's character calls him Raymond. And from newspaper clippings in the video, it says that his last name was Brody. So, Raymond Brody. Charles was my papaw's first name. He later dropped it because his parents gave him like three first names. And he was cool, just like the standard first and middle. Ray's birthday, February 25th, 1927, was also my papaw's birthday. Ruby, Ray's sister, was named after my mama because, A, I loved her. And Ruby is not far off from Reba. So it made sense to me. Ray and Ruby's parents, William and Rose, were the names of my great-grandfathers because Mama and Pawpaw's, both of their dads were named William. And my great-grandmother, Rose, my mama's mother. The only other named characters in the story are Seth Amos, who's actually, that is the only name in the song. I think it says, since you've been gone, she's been seeing that Amos boy, Seth. And then Ray's wife, Bobby. With Bobby, I wanted it to be a period-appropriate name. So I couldn't go with like Brittany or like Kirsten. And I wanted to try to connect it back to the song somehow. So I looked up popular girl names from the 20s and 30s, and the name Barbara stood out to me. And the guy that wrote the song, The Night the Lights Went Out in Georgia, his name was Bobby Russell. And sometimes Bobby's a nickname for Barbara, so the character became Bobby. In terms of the story, the lyrics don't tell us anything about the time period or location, but I knew it needed to be in Georgia, preferably a small town. And then I randomly remembered my grandparents had got married in Buck Hannon, so I went with that. As I was watching the music video, which I had to watch approximately 800 times in preparation for this episode, I paused it when one of the fake newspapers appeared on the screen, and it looked like it said 1951. And as I was doing research about Buck Hannon, I learned there was legit a fire that destroyed city records in 1950, so I thought that would be a good way to explain away some of the missing details. If you're familiar with the song lyrics, you'll know that it starts off by saying, he was on his way home from Candletop, been 2 weeks gone, and he thought he'd stop at Webb's and have him a drink before he went home to her. Candletop isn't actually a place. Like, it's not real. So I had to find something similar. I searched, because I'm crazy. I searched business directories from Georgia from the 1950s for ideas. And I was originally going to have him visit the Columbus Candle Company, but I didn't feel like Columbus, as if y'all were going to Google this, I didn't feel like Columbus was far enough away from Buck Hannon to warrant a 2 week trip. So I went with Candler County because it was like 4 hours away and it had the word candle in it. So as close as I get to Candletop. In the song, the brother stops by Webb's to have a drink. I felt like that was too specific, and I was afraid it would cause people to guess the story's direction too early, so I left it out. I lied when I said Seth Amos was the only named one. Andy Wolo is also named. I knew I needed to incorporate Andy Wolo, but that is a very unique name. And if I said Andy Wolo, my hardcore 90s country people would know. So I was like, surely nobody actually has the last name Wolo. So I was like, it's got to be a nickname. So I started looking for last names that could conceivably be shortened to Wolo. I even went to ChatGPT, and it gave me a very weird list of options. So I was like, you know, I'll put a pin in it. I'll come back to it later. And you actually caught me in the middle of this, but I'd searched The Night the Lights Went Out in Georgia on YouTube, and a video from the Bubba Shot the podcast popped up. Sorry, I'm shouting out another podcast, but that podcast is hosted by three Southern comedians that we love, Trey Crowder, Corey Ryan Forrester, and Drew Morgan. So I immediately put it on. I'm listening to it. And at some point in their episode, they have a conversation about Wolo's name, and someone suggested that it could be short for Walensky. And I was like, got it. That's perfect. So he became Andy Walensky. I feel like I'm boring you with the details, but I'm almost done. So in the song, it seems like the brother comes in and Andy's immediately like, hey, your wife's a hoe and we bummed uglies. But I didn't feel like that would make for a good story. So I took creative license. And that's basically what most of the rest of the story is. The original song was some creative license thrown in. In terms of historical accuracy, I mentioned that Ray grabbed the Springfield Model 1861 rifle. Now, as I say in almost every episode, I don't know shit about guns, but I figured that if this gun was an heirloom, since the song says the only thing daddy left him and that was a gun, it probably had some historical value. So I thought, maybe an ancestor had fought with it in the Civil War and passed it down. And then I looked up guns that were used in the Civil War and I picked that one. In the story, when I go on my side tangent about the sheriff shooting the sheriff's deputy, that is like 98% true. The only thing that isn't true is that it wasn't a sheriff and a sheriff's deputy. Harris William was actually the chief of police, and Homer Marks was just listed as a one-time member of the Buckhannon force. But the shooting was 100% true, at least based on a July 1950 article from the Harrelson County Tribune that was quoted on the Harrelson County Historical Society's webpage. I don't know who the sheriff actually was at the time that Andy's murder would have taken place, and I didn't want to use a real person's name since they were kind of a bad guy. So that gave me an in to be like, I don't know who the sheriff was. Same situation with the judges. M. Neil Andrews resigned as chief judge of the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Georgia on April 31st, 1950, and the new judge wasn't confirmed until March of the next year. Don't know who the judge was during that time, but again, I didn't want to use a real person's name anyway. And everything I said about Miranda v. Arizona and Gideon v. Wainwright is totally true. So that's how I came up with this story. And I had to do it on the DL because I knew that you were going to get suspicious if you kept coming in and seeing me reading or listening to stuff related to the Lights Went Out in Georgia. There were several times where I had to like quickly close out of stuff. Like you came in, I think on Monday, and I had to flip my phone over because I was listening to it again.
I don't be studying what you're doing that hard.
Yeah, you do. And but you recognize patterns too, so you'd be like, "That's weird. That's suspicious."
I will tell you that there's a couple of times. I guess you had flipped your phone over, or like you like click on it to like close, turn the screen black, and I'm like, "The fuck was that?" But I'm not. I just, you know what I mean. I'm not suspicious like that. But I was like, wonder what she's up to.
I could have been talking to a side piece.
You could have been.
Instead, I was listening to the Night the Lights. Me and our kid have been listening to it on the way to school.
Side piece can cook good.
But one last thing that was part of my devious plan that you don't know, because y'all, Rob knew none of this, and I did not want him to know any of this, although it's been killing me. But I knew that if this episode just randomly dropped on April Fool's Day, y'all would know something was up. So I purposely delayed last week's episode. And I made an Instagram post saying that both that episode and this episode would be delayed. That way, when I drop this episode, it's late and it just happens to drop on April Fool's Day. Now, real talk, I'm actually not a big fan of April Fool's Day because I don't like being tricked and I'm very gullible. But I felt like this was a fun one. So hopefully y'all got through at least most of the story. I was afraid you were going to catch it because
the hanging was like very suspicious. I was like, bullshit, really?
I know. I was like, some of this sounds ridiculous. But I was like, maybe if I say it with enough conviction and make it seem like I have historical information to back it up, maybe it will be believable. But yeah, hopefully y'all got through at least most of it before figuring out where it was going. But let me know on Instagram if you figured it out before I got to the end, but maybe in a DM so that we don't give it away. So Rob, any final thoughts on my little prank?
I don't reckon. I've heard the song a bunch. I just never.
I mean, that's good because I was like, he's gonna, something is
I'm
gonna
not
get
that
away.
I could sing a couple of parts of some verses and for sure the chorus of that song. You know what I mean? But like, as far as lyrics go, that's not one that I know real well.
So here's another fun fact that you may or may not know. So it's a cover song. Did you know that? Like Reba wasn't the original singer.
Say what?
Reba wasn't the original singer. She did a cover. Like it's a cover of an original of a song.
Oh, I didn't know that. Reba didn't write any of her own songs, right?
No. But what's funny is you want to know who
So
the
she's
original.
just been singing covers, well, I guess covers and then songs written for her, I guess.
Yes, this is the second time we've had this conversation on this podcast because we had it. We talked about Fancy too.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yep. But
I think that's why I remembered that she didn't write from shit.
I think so. So the person that originally sang the song was Vicki Lawrence. Do you know who that is?
I mean,
Did you ever
she's
watch Mama's Family?
no.
You didn't watch Mama's Family? I love that show. So Vicki Lawrence, she was on the Carol Burnett show, and then she had a spinoff, Mama's Family. Can't believe you didn't watch Mama's Family. That's a Southern classic. So she was known for being like a comedic actress, but she was married to the guy that wrote the song, and he hated the song. And so she's like, well, I like it. I'll record it. And she did. And it actually charted higher. Like it went number one when she sang it, and it only went to like number 12 when Reba did it.
Yeah.
So there you go. So happy April Fools. Maybe y'all were fooled. But thank y'all so much for listening to the It's Murder Y'all podcast. As always, sources will be listed in the show notes and maybe one day on the website. Although I don't have a lot of sources for this week's episode because it was mostly made up. But please subscribe, rate, review, tell a friend, tell your mama. We'll see y'all next week. Lord willing, and the creek don't rise.
Happy April Fools, you bitch ass tinky winkies.